Welcome to the latest edition of
He Said,
She Said. We had a little bit of back and forth about who should bring us in, and I just declared it should be me because yesterday was International Women's Day, and so it just makes sense to let the woman, the She Said, if He Said, She Said, kick us off. And, you know, yesterday we decided to celebrate International Women's Day, a day that personally I don't think we need. I think that women should kind of be celebrated and appreciated every day. I don't need a special day of the year to do it.
Although you do like special days to celebrate you.
My birthday, yes.
It's not just limited to your birthday, though.
My birthday and Mother's Day. Those are the 2 days. Okay. Those are the only days that are just about me.
Right. I know.
Okay. They literally are the only 2 days that are just about me. But thank you, honey. But we decided to celebrate by watching the new Hillary Clinton documentary on Hulu. What did you think about the what we've watched so far? We did not finish it. We watched the first almost 2 episodes. We got like 3/4 of the way through and the time change just caught up with us.
Well, let's go back to your first part. And I just was thinking about this. We never say our names on the podcast. Do you notice that?
Oh, like, we used to in the beginning.
Right.
Okay.
No, I'm just thinking about that we jump in so quickly now.
Well, hi, because, this is Michelle Todd Shorsch. Well,
and no, I'm Peter Shorsch. Yeah. No, because we're going at like the podcast, like if there was some way for us to like just leave us recording and then like go back and edit through it. Cause like I wanted to talk to you last night. Remember I was chatty bear, like as we were going to bed, like, and you were going to sleep. And I kept like, no, let me tell you about what I think about Women's Day. And you're like, okay, I'm sleeping. You know, like we sprung forward and you know, it's 11:45 at night.
My least favorite day of the year. Losing an hour of sleep is not good.
And
for me,
we just had taped that. And I did have like all these like hot takes that I was dropping to you.
I don't about remember women. Any of them.
Well, going back to the Women's Day part, like I was saying, and it ties into the Hillary documentary. Yes, we watched it last night. And my first thought on it was, why isn't she president?
It was so sad.
How reassuring it would be to have her as president right now as we are going through what we are going through. There was all of that just kept popping.
But the emails, Peter, what did you do with her emails?
Well, and Benghazi.
And Benghazi.
Benghazi. No, the competence there. I also think one of the things that you have to remember when you're watching a documentary about Hillary or any of these folks is that they are so much more, and nobody's going to associate this word with Hillary. I get it. They're so much more honest about their navigation through life.
Yeah.
Whereas Donald Trump has just come up with some sort of revisionistic history about how he got from A to B. And there's no reflection. There's no insight. There's no regret. There's no human struggle in what Donald Trump did. He just was born and succeeded. And he was the best.
He's the best that there ever was. The best businessman.
And I get that people love Trump, but that's just so boring.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, when you watch a documentary on Hillary Clinton, there are so many ups and downs, valleys and peaks. You know, that Bill lost the 1980 race for governor. That, you know, the moment that I'm sure you're going to bring up.
82. Right.
Her time in law school. And yeah, there are just so many human moments on it. But I will circle back and say, you know what? I don't think that she is incredibly likable. And I see that watching that documentary. She's not entirely comfortable just sitting down and being aw shucks with people. And I'm not asking her to be. I don't see her as the best storyteller that I've ever heard or the most empathetic person that I've ever seen. Bill Clinton is, and that's why he was so likable. But again, he has his problems and he had his issues and maybe he shouldn't have been president and she should have. I don't associate likability necessarily with who would have been the best president. And I hate that question. Is she likable or was she likable enough or not? I can't believe that that's how people vote. And I know that they do. And it's disappointing because right now, if there's anything we needed, it would be a competent healthcare versed leader who is capable of making decisions on the global stage about what's going on.
Yeah, it was really hard for me to watch the documentary, if I'm being very honest, because I am one of those people who always was like, she's just not likable. I held my nose and voted for her in the last presidential, largely because I it was more important to stop Donald Trump. And then as I saw my little girl get very excited about a female president, I got more excited about it as well. I always believed that she was competent. I mean, she has literally spent her whole life learning and working and advocating to improve the human experience. And for me,
but
those emails,
there was literally a scene in there where somebody
who hasn't had emails, who hasn't conducted business outside of business emails? I mean, how many different email addresses do you have, Peter?
I'm not going to tell you.
Right. But it's a lot. I know how many you have, but thank you.
In addition to my secure email that I just got one of those like encrypted ones so that Signal and Proton emails so that people can send me
dark webs type stuff.
Yeah. I don't even want the email. I just want to tell people
that you have it.
Like if you want to send me encrypted like scoops.
This is where to send the encrypted
scoops.
Send
it to there. Like it's your little scoop about your budget item.
Oh, you want to encrypt that.
Do you want to get that encrypted? Send it to me at floridapolitics@proton.com.
Of course you would have that. I mean,
I signed up for it last night. I mean,
but your emails, what are you trying to hide? Why do you have to have an encrypted email, right, Peter? I just want to know. No, for me, I will say, and I told you this last night, I was very struck. There was a moment she was talking about when they went to go take the exam. Well, you know, she was in college. She was nervous about going to an all-girls school and finding her footing. And when she graduated, there had never been a student speaker at the graduation, which, you know, and then she became the first one ever. And it wasn't an election. It was just the class just decided, like, we should finally have a student speaker during this tumultuous time. And it just had to be Hillary. And what it must have taken to get up there and do that and be the very first one. That's not an easy thing to do. It's not easy to be a change maker and to help lead the way. And a lot of women, myself included, take for granted what the feminists of Hillary's generation did for us. Now, and when she talks about going to take the LSATs and going to law school, and she talks about how, you know, there was just a very small group of women doing that, and it was the largest class ever at Yale. It was 27 female law students, and the men were telling them, what are you doing here? Get out of here. And when they're taking the LSATs, the men are saying, you don't belong here. Women shouldn't be attorneys. And if you get a spot into law school and you take my spot and then I have to go to Vietnam and die, how are you going to feel about that? And that, you know, I can't even imagine what it must have felt like to do something so difficult and excel at it under those circumstances. And as Hillary explained, you know, back then, you didn't. Now, if someone said that to me, I would just chime right back. I would make some smart ass quip and stand right up for myself and, you know, call the man a chauvinist to his face without hesitation. But back then, you didn't do that. Back then, you weren't allowed to be emotional. You weren't allowed to show how people were treating you impacted you. Hillary said, you just put your head down and you just did the work and you just had to get to the point you were going. And your success was supposed to prove your reasoning. And then she said, and then fast forward to when she's running for president and she suddenly expected to be very emotional and showing all of her human faults. And that was a hard thing because she had already, that switch had been flipped to don't let the feelings overtake you. Don't let people hurt you because that will just get in the way. That's a hard switch to flip. And, you know, I hadn't thought about it that way. It was enlightening for me.
Can I jump in and say, what I was trying to tell you last night when you went to bet, which is, and it was the Mars, men are from Mars, women are from Venus argument, which,
right.
And this is hot take-ish, but it's true.
Now, he didn't say men are from Mars, women are from Venus.
No, well, you brought
I
it.
I replied. Yeah.
I'm not likable 80% of the time. You're not likable. Like, this idea that we're all supposed to be likable is a fallacy. And I know people are not going to believe this or not, but women generally like things that are different than what men like. And so as much as there are women who enjoy Avengers, and I know that there is a huge number of women that do, no, I do not think that all of my women friends enjoy Avengers to the same level that the sum total of all of my men friends do. Now, as you hear me on the phone every day, I probably talk to women more than I talk to men. I enjoy talking to women. I enjoy good conversation. And quite honestly, I'm not in Tallahassee. And so to talk to people about politics, I have to call more so than, you know, I'm not in a capital city where people are just talking about politics if you go into a bar.
And I can only talk so much politics with you.
Right. And so I enjoy talking on the phone about politics. So that being said, I don't talk to these same women about The Wire, even though I know that women like The Wire.
No, you spend hours on the phone with Tony DeSisto talking about stuff like
The Wire. I just think the Venn diagram of like overlap between what women like and men like are not, and they are not the same. There's only a small sliver of where there is overlap. And therefore, to base Hillary Clinton, to base likability on about a candidate, you're setting her up to fail because we inherently don't like the same things as women do. And women don't inherently like the same things as men do. And it's just, I hope we haven't got rid of this argument because as we're watching, you know, Kristen Wiig do the impression of Elizabeth Warren on Saturday night, which was great, it still comes down to whether or not this brilliant, aggressive woman was likable or not. And right. So no, 8 years later, you know, or 12 years later, we have still not solved the likability issue when it comes to a presidential candidate. So, or a female presidential candidate.
Yeah, it's just, and I don't know what we do to solve that. I mean, it's,
I think what you have to do is you have to have a woman run as vice president
and
that ticket win and people show that it's just irrelevant to Mike Pence is not likable. He's like yes, he is a holy roller. He is a decent, he seems to be a decent man. But is he somebody that you're just like, that you gravitate to in the same way that you would a Bill Clinton or a George W. Bush, who is, you know, eminently likable? No, I don't think so.
But as much as I want to believe you that if we get a woman VP, and I hope that it's Kamala Harris on Joe Biden's ticket, I just don't know if I can buy into that because they told us when Hillary didn't get elected that, well, it's just because she wasn't likable enough,
right,
and she had too much baggage, and it was the emails, and it was Benghazi, and it was she stood by her husband when he cheated on her, and all of this, everything you could launch at a woman who was incredibly qualified for the office of president. So then this cycle, we had a very diverse field of female candidates running for president of the United States. Elizabeth Warren arguably being one of the most qualified. Again, she checked all of the qualified boxes that Hillary Clinton checked and didn't have all of the scandals of Hillary Clinton and wasn't, you know, the Clinton machine establishment. But she couldn't do it. Kamala Harris couldn't do it. I mean, Amy Klobuchar couldn't do it. So none of these women could break the mold. You know, so I just don't want to hold out the hope that, well, maybe now this time, maybe if you get a female vice president, maybe then people won't care if she's likable enough and won't come up with a billion excuses to not vote for her. I don't know that it will happen. I just don't know that we will see a female president anytime soon. It's like you said, men and women are innately different, and it is men were the hunters and the providers back because they were stronger back at the beginning of man. And this is just the way it's continuing to play out and have ripple effects throughout the evolution of mankind. And I hope that we can change it, but I don't know. It's right, something that I'm worried about.
I think that's a good place to take a break and hear from one of our sponsors.
It takes a special calling to be a nurse, but misguided laws are preventing qualified nurses from providing care. We can change that. Ask your legislator to expand scope of practice for nurses. Empower nurses to do the jobs they were trained to do. Paid for by Americans for Prosperity.
Michelle is wondering where her...
where my ad revenue is going.
Yeah, she wants... She's like, I didn't
get that paycheck for AFP.
It goes into the Big Shorsh pot.
I want my own pot for that. I expect to see my check this afternoon.
Okay.
And by my check, I mean, I'm going to log on to Nordstrom.com, who's not an advertiser, and buy some stuff.
All right. So it's the last week of the legislative session.
Or as I like to call it, the last week before spring break.
Right. Next week is spring break. Next week is awesome. It's spring break, St. Patrick's Day. All right. Let's go through. Let's just give a little rundown on session on some of the big ticket items right now. It looks like there's going to be a big increase for teacher salaries. Big win for
now.
Ron DeSantis there.
So here's my question. Is it the big increase on new teachers, or did they solve the issues that the teachers union had that longtime teachers aren't going to be seeing it and that new teachers are going to be making the same or more than teachers who've been teaching for 20 years?
That's a great question. And that will be part of the discussion over the next coming week.
Because it's not a victory until they solve that, right? We have to be honest here.
No, I think that I don't know. I mean, was the commercial for the Florida Education Association right there? Because
it's not. I'm asking the question.
No,
I don't follow.
I think it's
I'm
a victory.
Honest about the fact that I don't follow these issues as closely as you do.
I think it's a victory if you get $600 million and it says teacher salaries, it could go to the janitors. It's a victory.
Right.
If it's basically to reset the new starting pay or the pay for new starting teachers. And some of the veteran teachers do not get that. That does stink for the veteran teachers. I get that. And we should figure out a way to compensate them more. But I will still take the increase for...
First of all, you know I will too. I'm just playing devil's advocate here because I am not someone who... I don't have purity tests like the Democrats. I don't bite my nose off to spite my face. Just because something's not perfect, I wouldn't turn it down. It's asinine to say we're not taking teacher pay increases because not all the teachers are getting it. I was just asking you. I kind of was just playing with you on the issue. That's all. I actually think it's a great thing. I've long wanted to see teacher pay increases, but it's just kind of fun to make you do the dance for me sometimes, babe.
Sure. I get it. We've been doing a lot of coverage of the various budget items. One of the big things, and we'll talk with this with our guest, Ana Terra Flores, who's in her last week of her last year in session. Big win is that they have agreed not to sweep the money that goes to the Sandusky Trust Fund, which is earmarked for affordable housing. That's a big issue in Florida. And so this will be the first year.
And if people don't follow that issue closely, I mean, I don't know when the last time is that we fully funded Sandusky.
It's always swept. It's always swept.
It's always been used to fill budget shortfalls.
Right. So that's a big win. That'll come out of here as a big win. Another thing is that they've earmarked $100 million for Florida forever for land acquisition. Finally going through with the constitutional amendment that says that money needs to go to that. That is another win, another budget win. So I think you're going to see the the legislature come home, and I think that they are going to have a lot to tout, especially if you look at it from the 2 year, you know, from the last time they were elected. I think it is one of the more successful legislative periods. But I think all of that will be lost if we are in coronavirusville and we are in the, and, you know, our way of life is changed in 2 weeks, which is, as you and I are taping this podcast, the stock market is halted
to stop the bleeding because it was just crashing.
It was crashing around us. It was, yes. It had dropped 7% inside of the first 7 minutes.
It dropped 17%, like pretty quickly.
Oh, I thought it had only gone down 7%.
My Twitter feed says 17%. I don't know what we have different Twitter feeds though.
I didn't see that. I don't think it could go down. If it went 17%, like we would be.
Well, listen, I'm not saying my Twitter feed's accurate. I'm just saying.
But it's from Twitter.
But it's from Twitter.
So it's got to be.
So it's got to be. That's why I readily said to you, like, that's just what my Twitter feed said. I'm not saying that it's
I'm
correct.
Almost certain it's 7% and it's been shut down.
It has been shut down.
At that point.
Yes.
Oil
that
prices.
That also popped up on my Twitter feed that it has been shut down. But it was confirmed by my Facebook feed.
All right. Before we talk coronavirus, do we want
to... Let's talk to Anna Senator Flores. Before.
Who's like our new best friend. Like, she's one of my favorite people to talk to now this session. So I'm really excited that she agreed to come onto the pod. One of the funny things that you guys won't hear is that we were listening to her as she was
on the elevator in the Capitol.
I'm just saying hi to everybody. We're like, we need to just tape this.
Yeah, because that's the content I want.
Let's check in with her. Good morning, Senator Anna Tara Flores. How are you today?
Doing great. Good morning to you and Michelle.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us. We know that it is a busy time as you're going into the last week of session. Can you kind of give our listeners a little quick overview of what you're looking forward to in this last week?
Well, first thing looking forward to is to actually finish.
Yes.
I are going to have to go into a little bit of overtime. So it's the last couple of days of session. Think we are going to have to go into overtime, but hopefully just for a few days, not for too long. So, you know, personally, I'm looking forward to these last days, especially because they happen to be my last days in the Senate. And so I'm going to be, you know, looking forward to it and trying to soak in as much as I can. And then, you know, it's in these last 5 days where kind of every major issue is going to get resolved, from healthcare to transportation and everything in between. You know, we're going to work on it for the next 5 days.
When is your farewell address?
It is actually this morning, Monday morning at 11 a.m.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, so I'll be doing that.
We're going to have to leave and go watch that. Okay.
So yeah, so it's this morning. And so looking forward to kind of just sharing a, you know, couple of anecdotes, a couple of lessons learned, and, you know, hopefully leaving people a little inspired to continue some of the work that I've worked on.
What's like the one thing that you really hope people continue to work on that you've worked on?
Well, I'll give you guys a little preview of my speech because I've got two major ones that I've worked on over the years that I hope people take up. One is a scholarship that I helped create when I was in the House that is for students who would be the first in their family to graduate college. It's you know, incredible success stories of people that have gone through that. And the second is an issue that I've worked on the last couple of years, which is research funding for pediatric cancer. It's a disease that hits too many people. There's not nearly enough research that's being done. The state started funding it a couple of years ago. And already in the 3 years that we've been funding it, there's already results that are being proved that are coming out from the research that we've conducted. And so it's kind of like for the first time.
We saw that with a friend of ours.
We had two friends have daughters diagnosed with neuroblastoma within 6 weeks of each other.
Oh, my God.
And they both survived.
They survived. Like,
but
both
they
of
were
them.
Serious cases.
And,
the
one who had like the more serious diagnosis, she was stage 4. She's part of a very limited drug trial, which thanks to research that largely had to be privately funded. So what you've done is very important, because you're right. Pediatric research, cancer research is grossly underfunded. But yeah, the drug trial has worked, and she is coming up on her 5-year anniversary of no evidence of disease. So
That's good. That's a miracle.
Yes,
and so those are the things that I've worked on, and I hope that it continues to, that we continue to do it.
It seems, especially with somebody like yourself, like you are, I don't remember you ever being a backbencher. I'm sure you probably have some moments, but you were, I mean, there was an incredible run there where you were chair of insurance and you were chair of healthcare, right? I mean, isn't that, which I don't remember anybody doing before.
So it was quite the year. I shared banking and insurance and healthcare appropriations, and I was the president pro tem. That was under President Negron, and he kept me busy, but we got to do some really, really just incredible and great things during that time. You know, one of the other issues that I've kind of always found myself in the crosshairs has been on property insurance issues and trying to balance to make sure that consumers are always looked out for when we're looking at insurance issues. And so I'm, hoping that someone takes up that mantle once I'm gone from here.
I remember I remember asking you a fun question about that, about at the insurance summit 3 years ago. And you had explained about how assignment of benefits was a major issue in your community and about the fraud that was going on, et cetera. And I was like, how is that a major? And it got me looking at it, and I saw that it was on the radar and it was a big issue. And it was, I know that was that's been a big issue for the last decade, which is, that's kind of my point. Also, I don't remember the Senate without you at this point. Isn't that how you kind of feel like you've only been there for a decade, but I can't believe I think this is the worst part of term limits. It seems like right now you would be hitting your stride. It's like asking, a great basketball player, James Harden or something like that. Hey, all right, you've been here for 8 years. You've been here for 10 years. We need you to move on. And I just don't understand that argument.
Yeah. Well, because term limits exist, I'm certainly at the point where I'm ready that it's time to go. I think one of my biggest kind of messages to those that stay beyond is that, you need to understand that the senator, the representative, whatever, you're the one that was elected. There's a lot of shift in power that can happen during term limits, where the people that end up having more power are the people who weren't the ones who were actually elected, be it staff, be it lobbyists. And these are all fine people, but they weren't the ones who, put their names on a ballot to get elected. And so, and I think you've heard that with some of the speeches just in the last couple of days, which is, remember, you're the one that's in charge, right? Because you lose a lot of that as term limits continue.
I think term limits are one of those, like a lot of those things, they start off as a do-gooder thing, and to lose like the institutional memory that you have, or a Bill Montfort, or David Simmons, people in this class that are leaving. Mm-hmm. I genuinely, I don't think that they would lose at an election. I don't think that they would. I don't think that their constituents necessarily want them to move on. I don't, other than the folks at U.S. term limits, I just don't see that. I know we only have you for a moment or two. What has been the big surprise this legislative session as we're coming into last week? What has really stood out to you as a surprise?
Listen, I maybe this is just because this is something that's just happening, but I think a big surprise are some of the things that we're able, some big picture things that we're able to fund in the budget this year. Obviously, we talked about teacher pay, and that's very important. I've been here for, 10 years in the Senate, 6 in the House before that. This is a major teacher pay increase that's actually going to the salary. And then other things, look, we haven't had an across the board pay increase for state employees in a super long time. So I think that's major. And then looking at not sweeping the Sadowski fund, that's incredibly
huge.
Major.
I mean, that's huge.
You know, we've talked about these things for so long. And so I would say really, if I would say one surprise is that things that we've been talking about forever that we were going to do, we're actually doing them this year. So it's a good way to head out.
All right. So, well, we know that you are busy, so we're going to let you go. Our last question is, what is one thing, the first thing you're going to do when you're out of office?
Oh my gosh, sit and cuddle with my two boys and maybe just do that for like days and days on end. I tell you, I spoke to them this morning, and you know, they both were very insistent in saying, okay, so when you come home on Saturday, hopefully I'll be home on Saturday, you don't have to go to Tallahassee anymore, right? And I was like, I promise, no more Tallahassee. So message out there to the presiding officers. If there's a special session, I might not come back for.
Well, thank you.
Nothing should get in the way between you and snuggling your boys. That's definitely the most important thing. Yeah.
And we'll catch up with you probably again during the summer. Maybe we'll get some insights when you're a little bit away from the process and you can start like really, you know, letting out some of the truths about what goes on during the legislative cycle.
Yes, that sounds like definite. You guys take me up on it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
I'll take you guys up on it. Okay.
Bye. We all know that guy who says he knew Trump was going to win long before election night. Had he known about Predict It, he could have put his money where his mouth was and made a little extra cash in the process. Predict It is like the stock market for politics. You can buy and sell shares in future events and elections, both foreign and domestic. During the 2018 midterms, Predict It beat other national pollsters like Nate Silver in election night predictions, and it wasn't even close. It's easy and only costs a few bucks to get started. He said, she said listeners can get a special introductory offer by visiting predictit.org/promo/FLAPOL.
Thank you to Senator Flores. We will maybe try and insert maybe a couple of highlights from her farewell speech in the pod. But if not, we'll get a link to it and put that on the Facebook page, which thank you to one of our producers, Megan Holmes, who has been very active in reinvigorating our Facebook and Twitter feed. And so there's a lot of good content coming from Michelle and myself with Megan's help. We are trying to build that out a little bit. So thank you to her for that. Also, a quick plug. This is a great time to be listening to Sunrise, our daily podcast about all things that are going on in Florida politics. You know, a lot is going on, and so you will get a little bit of coronavirus. You will get
I don't want to get coronavirus.
No, right. You'll get a little bit of Democratic primary. Well, you know what? It's kind of funny. I think podcasts are here. Give me some of that hand sanitizer. Oh,
don't take mine. I'll give you
just
some
as I'm sitting here with you.
I forgot to bring Lysol for the microphones. I'm a little bit nervous about that.
I think podcasts are going to be a big thing
when people are quarantined.
When people are quarantined, because you're going to want to have conversations with people.
Yeah.
And
oh, I better download some new podcasts. That's a good point.
Well, I mean, they're still going to go on. We'll still be able to tape. I mean, it'll be like it's almost like the 21st century of people on the CB. They're going to want to hear the stuff. They can, you know, it's not the internet. So it is the internet, but it's not the internet. And I think people are going to feel connected.
Are you trying to say that we're going to do like the cruise quarantine podcast?
All right. Kidding. So here, let me ask you that. All right. We have a cruise coming up.
We have a Disney cruise coming up.
Shocking.
I know. Everyone who listens to this is surprised to hear that we take Disney cruises.
Are we still going on it?
Currently, we are. The cruise is not until April 24th. So,
and Disney has changed its policy so that
Disney's changed their cancellation policy. Because here's the one thing that's interesting about the coronavirus issue. A lot of people purchase travel insurance. Well, travel insurance cannot be used because of fear of illness. now that the State Department has issued their warning that Americans should not cruise, I think that people can maybe use their trip insurance. I'm not sure if there's like different levels that the State Department, because they haven't issued a travel ban. If the state, no, yeah. So if the State Department issued a ban on cruising, then the trip insurance would have to be able to be utilized. But, and it also depends on your policies. I know that's crazy. But Disney's changed their policy. They're now allowing people, they only have to give 24 hours notice to cancel their cruises, and they can use all of the money that they paid for that cruise to rebook another cruise within the next year. So that is a change. So we don't have to make the decision now. We can
wait until the last moment.
Until April 22nd.
All right, here's a better question. Let's say in 3 weeks,
the Roy Disney Suite pops up on the Dream.
Would you go?
Absolutely.
See, I think they're only...
Because none of us are in the Target. Well, only if the price drops. Let's be clear. Like, right, if there's a fire sale on the Royal Suite, I'm going. We're all healthy. We don't have respiratory issues. I'm knocking on wood as I say this. So we should be okay. The only thing we would have to fear is the quarantine issue. And, well, I mean, there's worse things than being quarantined on a Disney cruise.
On the Royal Suite? That would be, I mean...
I can palo in my room.
Ella Joyce, she would want to be like quarantine us for 2 weeks.
Yeah, she'd be like, perfect. I'll be in my hot tub on my balcony. Right. It's no big. I mean, we overpack anyway, so it's not like we would have issues with stuff. You know?
As long as you have internet.
Right. You'll just keep paying for the internet.
Yeah, you'd have to have internet. That would be the big thing. I get where people are. It's not about whether or not they fear the cruise ships are clean or not. It's about are they going to get quarantined in Jamaica, or are they going to get, you know, quarantined off the coast of Florida or something like that?
Yeah. And I get people who are concerned because they might not get to get off in their ports. Well, we don't care. When we're cruising out of Port Canaveral, we are not picking those cruises because of the ports they go to. We've been there. We've done that. We don't really care. We're going for the cruise ship.
Well, I like going to
Atlantis to gamble, which I'm sorry. There's too much coronavirus there. So
you wouldn't let me gamble at this point?
No, probably not.
Well, then I don't know that I'll be
coronavirusing, risking. I don't know. Well, like I said, we have time to think about it. Some cruise lines are offering full refunds, like period. And if Disney gets to that point, then I probably would just partake in that, because then we can just use that money and plan another trip for that exact weekend.
What's your deep, dark fear on all of this right now? Like, are you worrying? I mean,
my deep, dark fear about with our cruise is that if we were to get quarantined, it might ruin Disney cruising for our family. Like, Ella might grow to hate it, and then we would lose that source of joy.
I guess I was more asking about, like, the larger coronavirus.
Oh, the larger. I am concerned that our hospitals don't have the capacity that they will need to deal with it. And I'm concerned with the economic impacts. You know that I'm a lunatic and you support my lunacy and maybe help amp each other up on that. So we're fully prepped at our house. It's okay. I'm prepared for, you know, not eating out anymore and all of that. But I am concerned about the economic impacts. I mean, We're already seeing it with the stock market, and we just don't know how far reaching this. I mean, it could send us into a recession.
I think we're going to be, I think we're there no matter what at this point. Yeah.
I mean, there's just no way we're going to escape that. And it was, and this country's still crawling out from the last recession.
I think, and I'm very scared about that. And I've been one of the people that has been saying that, but I would say, unlike 2008, where there were systematic problems, like the market was a bubble, especially in the real estate. Like, this is only a sell-off because supply and demand are out of whack right now. And as tough and as horrible as that will be, as millions of Americans are impacted by that. You know, I think of the poor service employees, of which I was one. I remember being in New York City when the market crashed up there and how bad it was to work in New York during that time. And, you know, the tips just ended.
Well, I told you, that's what I've been concerned about when we keep talking about when the State Department just issued yesterday their declaration that Americans should not cruise. My first thought wasn't about our upcoming cruise. It was about all of the people who work on those cruise ships and rely on that tip income, because their whole income is tip based. Their pay from the cruise ship is their free room and board, and all of their income that they get to send home to support their families is from the tips they get. And they're all losing that right now. And that's really upsetting to me. And yes, it's going to, you're, like you said, you're, our restaurant friends are going to see it too.
I think, I guess my silver lining is that they're, just to close that, is there isn't a fundamental flaw in the economic system. This isn't the end of capitalism. But it could be.
Thank God that we're not looking at the end of capitalism, because Joe Biden's going to take out Bernie Sanders.
Oh, all right. I want to close right there because.
Yeah, I was opening the door for you.
Man, Bernie Sanders just sucks on so many levels. And that's not going to surprise
anybody.
And
the Hillary documentary, but the Hillary documentary, how much she sucks.
Right. And you think about, like, you know, if it wasn't for him, I think she has a much better shot at knocking off Trump.
Yeah, if it wasn't for him going out there every single day, assassinating her character.
Right. And he continues to do it now with Joe Biden. And you just realize that this man is not a democratic socialist. He's an anarchist. And yes. I know that there are people that support him. And a lot of people support him because they want either free tuition, free whatever, free
student loan forgiveness, free college, free.
And I'm not going to, there's a moral hazard that has to be kept in place for people that went there. Should we reduce the cost of college? Yes. Should we try and get more scholarships and so forth? Yes. But you can't just cancel every student loan just because this guy gets in there. And you want to talk about likable. He's not a likable man.
Not at all.
And it's just like, it's a shame that.
I mean, it's like he purposely goes the opposite way. It's like he's purposely angry old white guy screaming.
I'm thinking about poor Megan is going to produce this.
I know. I'm sorry, Megan.
And she's a Bernie supporter.
Okay. And listen, I understand. Maybe if I was younger.
If you have been born into a system and the system was broken, which is what younger people, Megan's younger than us, she's still going to go to law school. Listen, post 08, the whole system is corrupt.
Yes.
It is built for the elites. But we remember an America of the 80s to the 90s, the 80s where it's like, yes, a lot of wealthy people got rich, but also a lot of small businesses got started. And
yeah,
we all got better. Same thing in the 90s with Bill Clinton. You know, it's just like we all took a step forward. Yes, the rich got much richer. We haven't had this we did not grow up in this economic inequality that has come in over this last decade where the rich become super rich and the rest of us don't get anything. I want the 80s and 90s back. I want that where it's like, hey, a millionaire makes a million, but the guy who's making $100,000 gets $10,000 more too. I want that, you know, and that's, I want to return to that. And I don't think Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders represent that right now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for me, it is definitely. I'm with you. I think Bernie Sanders is to the Democrats what Donald Trump is to Republicans, and I don't know how people can't see that. And I'm really glad that the Democratic Party is coalescing around Joe Biden right now, and it looks like hopefully he will be the nominee for the Democrats in this presidential election.
Well, we will find out next Tuesday. We will try and get some guests, maybe to do some Florida primary preview. It will be a busy time that last day or so. We are actually going to be number one engaged with our top priority, which is taking Ella Joyce on her spring break. What, you're looking at me like we can't pod from the road?
I mean, we're not gonna be able to have guests from the road.
We'll figure that out.
But yeah, but we will be on spring break next week. And as you know, when Ella's not in school, I'm full mom. We have a dance competition this weekend leading straight into spring break. It's a busy, busy, busy time.
It's the last days of session leading into the presidential primary. If you run a website called FloridaPolitics.com,
I know you're working.
It's going to be a busy time.
You're working. That's part of why I did not go back to work full time after we had a child, because you can do those things and I can do the other things, like make sure she builds the baddest leprechaun trap ever.
Oh, I love that. Well, thank you for listening to this edition of He said.
She said.